You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com. It may be a ranty show today because
it's going to be ranty.
Well, I didn't get a lot of sleep and I'm a little annoyed and things have been kind of setting me off. And it's really because when you send anybody home from the hospital these days, you send them home way too early. And so I basically become the caretaker for my poor daughter, my 18-year-old who can't get around the house yet. And it's like I'm ready to reach out and just smack someone. And throughout the morning, I have been reading this nonsense, Ed, about the Yankees now proposing a new deal for Dylan Cease.
But it's not really a good deal. It's a new deal.
Right.
But it still sucks.
But it doesn't have Spencer Jones in it.
Right.
Which I would assume means that it doesn't have Jason Dominguez in it.
Right.
Which means it isn't a real offer.
Right.
Which means it's something I'm not interested in. When Andy Martino, who's a New York media guy, sports guy, is immediately tweeting out that he's already hearing there's better offers that are out there right now than what the Yankees are offering, and the White Sox aren't interested in those offers. It really feels like it's the Yankees once again saying, hey, but we're the Yankees, and we just want your player, so we're going to say some stuff in the media, and we're going to put pressure on this new GM, and he's just going to give it to us. And they're trying to strong arm, and Chris Getz should continue to just hold on to his pitcher. And the thing that has frustrated me the most, my friend, just the most in this, in the Dylan Cease trade talks.
What is that?
It is a section of the fan base that can't wait to trade him.
Right. Oh my God, that's getting old. It's getting old, it's getting old.
It is, because here's the thing. You still have him for 2 years. And 2 years is in chump change. And he's still a very effective pitcher, and I think he may have his best season yet. He's got a very good defense behind him for the first time ever. He's throwing the ball really well in spring training. He's motivated. He's watching Blake Snell not get a deal. And he's got the same agent that in 2 years is going to take him in the free agency. And he's like, I need to up my game so I'm not Blake Snell in 2 years. Here's a guy who can't wait to go out there and pitch. I think he's going to have a great season. And the problem is there's a mentality. And I don't know if it's generational. And I don't want to be one of those guys who's in his 40s picking on the people in their 30s. I don't want to do that. But it does seem as though there's a group of fans that only know in their baseball lives one way to make a winning team. And that is to blow everything up, get a bunch of prospects, lose for 4 or 5 years, and then become good. They've been preconditioned to it by watching the Cubs do it. They watch the Blackhawks do it. If you want to switch sports, right?
Yeah, but you know what, though? This is the problem with it, too, though. I know they watched it, and I know they saw it be effective with two other Chicago sports teams, but you forget what those teams were before they blew it up. The Cubs sucked. They were horrible before they blew it up. They were absolutely abysmal. They were terrible. They had no stars. They traded what few guys that they had, like Andrew Cashner. I'm sorry, not really a guy. Okay, and got some prospects that had maybe a brighter future, and they were more of a dart throw. When the Blackhawks were miserable, they were terrible. They were terrible, terrible, terrible team forever. They've been terrible since the 90s. All they kept doing was losing. They just got better with drafting. They got better with player evaluation. They got better about who they brought in. That's what Chris Getz needs to do. He doesn't need to trade his best player to get somebody else's player development.
This episode of Sacks in the Basement and every episode brought to you by Cork and Carry at the park in the shadow of the ballpark at 33rd and Princeton. The big drawing for the trip to Hawaii happening this Friday. It's actually going to be at the Beverly location. I'm going to help out with the drawing on Friday. And then after somebody gets sent to Hawaii, and remember, you could still get in there. You could still register. It doesn't cost you anything. Get a Kona draft for $5. But then after that, focus on one of the biggest weekends on the South Side. Cork and Kerry and Beverly going to be the epicenter of the South Side Irish Parade. I'll be out there. I believe we're dragging Ed as well. 106th and Western. Should be a fun weekend all weekend long at both locations. See more at corkandcarry.com. And it started with the Yankee rumor. And now there's reports that other teams are upping their offers to the White Sox for Dylan Cease. There's suddenly buzz around the Rangers. There's suddenly buzz around the Padres. There's rumors that top 100 prospects on the MLB pipeline list are included. And the Sox are kicking the tires on starting pitcher Michael Lorenzen, who's still sitting out there and is a guy that we have mentioned should have been added to the staff a while ago. And I would like them to add him to the staff and keep Dylan Cease. But if you trade him, it better be for somebody who's ready to get here now. I don't want a prospect that's not getting here for 3 years as the centerpiece of the deal. You do not need to always tear things down to the studs to create a team that's a contender. Not every team in baseball does that. Not every team in pro sports does that.
No.
There are plenty of teams that build and they can actually develop while they go out and they compete. And it is not a thing where you always have to tear down to the studs. And the White Sox are perfectly set up right now to make a quick turnaround. And I believe Chris Getz and the brain trust that's up there now think the same way. If they don't, they should get out of the building because I can go in there right now and I can build this. I think most people who have a general knowledge of baseball and can listen to scouts and kind of go, that guy seems to make sense. We'll put that guy at this point on the list and then we'll work through the list and we'll spend the money that's been allotted to us. I think anybody of that ilk could build a team in 2025. When you only owe Andrew Benintendi $17.1 million, Luis Robert Jr. $15 million, and then you can buy out Moncada, Jimenez, Stassi, Brebbia, Maldonado. I think those are all the buyouts. I think they add up to a little over $8 million. And trust me, when you buy out for $5 million, you want Moncada, you're going to be like, that makes an awful lot of sense because I don't think there's a six war season coming. And everybody else is arbitration eligible, pre-arbitration eligible, or a free agent. The money you will have to work with for free agency. The players you will discover this year, not everybody's going to work out, but you are going to find pitchers this year based upon the way that they are running things. You are going to find players that you're like, yes, this guy is the answer. Could be Dominic Fletcher in right field. You are going to start to figure out what players are going to be there when you go to the next level. And then you're going to say, we need to go get this position. We need to go add this pitcher. We need to add this thing over here. And look at all this money we have now because it came off the books.
Get it out of your head, White Sox fans, that other teams know players better than your general managers. Rick Hahn didn't know his ass from his elbow when it came to player development. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it. He was a lawyer. He was a good guy with contracts. He did some interesting things with guys avoiding arbitration when he finally figured out or lucked into the fact that they were good. And Kenny Williams drafted athletes. He didn't know a ball player if it bit him in the ass. Kenny Williams sucked at baseball, by the way. Look at his career stats. He was terrible. He was a terrible, terrible baseball player. And Chris Getz wasn't that much better, I admit. But still, the idea behind this is that can Chris Getz identify good players? And that means the guys you're going to spend money on. Do you spend money wisely? Rick Hahn didn't spend his money wisely. He brought in Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel sucked.
He wasted all kinds of money on a bullpen when most teams don't do that.
Exactly. It's the equivalent of an NFL team giving all of their salary cap to a running back in an era where running backs are cheap. You just don't do it. And this is what we have to stop doing. I don't care about the Yankees prospects. I don't think the Yankees prospects are that great. Spencer Jones might be a really good player someday. And I'm not saying that having him back in a trade would be an inherently bad thing. But also, if Spencer Jones shows up next year, but Dominic Fletcher's playing really well and Andrew Benintendi's still on the books for a couple more years, where's Spencer Jones playing exactly? Why does that make the team so much better? He would have to beat somebody out. That's great.
But I would take Spencer Jones.
And I'm not saying I wouldn't take him. I'm just saying I think Chris Getz doesn't have to go after whatever the Yankees are peddling, because if he finds players in other teams we're not thinking of, okay? If he finds players elsewhere that fit what he wants to do better, great. If Spencer Jones comes back as part of a trade package for Dylan Cease and he works out, that's great too. But take your time. You don't need to blow this up.
I look at the Yankees prospects and I see Jason Dominguez, who, by the way, isn't going to be ready till halfway through the year because he's coming off of a surgery and an injury.
Right.
And I have Spencer Jones, who probably doesn't show up until 2025. But either one of them fall within the range of arrival times for the White Sox that make it acceptable to me if they're part of a package for Dylan Cease. I keep seeing White Sox fans, I'm not trying to pick on anybody individually here, but I keep seeing White Sox fans going, well, if they could get Rodrick Arias and a package around him. He's their third best prospect. He's on the MLB Pipeline Top 100 list. I trade Dylan Cease, and I see an ETA of 2027 or later for this guy, who admittedly, solid middle infielder. He's a shortstop. He's got power. He's projected by a lot of scouts to be a 30-30 guy. He isn't going to be here for 3 years or more, and I don't want to wait that long.
He's 19 years old. He's hit 194 in 2022 in rookie ball and 267 last year. Tell me why, at 19 years old, he is so much better of a prospect than anything Chris Getz could find this year, or anything that Chris Getz could sign next year on the international market, or anything that Chris Getz could find from another organization. What? Because MLB Pipeline puts him at number three in the Yankee system, the vaunted Yankee system that has produced, oh, they don't have enough starting pitching right now, which is why they need Dylan Cease. They can't actually field an outfield competently, which is why they're still dragging guys like Harrison Bader out there. Look at the Yankees. The Yankees are in deep trouble right now because Aaron Judge's tummy hurts. And it's not like he ate Taco Bell. Like, for some reason, the dude can't swing a bat, even though he is supposed to be their entire offense, right? This is not a team that we should be fawning over their prospects. I don't understand that aspect of it either. Where, as White Sox fans, have become so conditioned to our farm system sucks, or it's top heavy with just one or two guys, that we have to look at other teams' farm systems and say they must be so much better. I don't think the Yankees have done a great job of bringing prospects along. They're young guys that they brought up. Anthony Volpe was terrible last year, right? He was supposed to hit the ground running. Gleyber Torres, their second baseman, came from the Cubs. Right, so he wasn't even one of theirs. Who are the Yankees fielding right now that makes you sit there and go, I'm willing to take on somebody that they've identified as a teenager who is scuffling along in rookie ball, and I think that they're so good at identifying talent that I'm going to trade Dylan Cease for that guy.
Socks in the Basement listeners, switch to a new age of life with Hyatt Home Medical Equipment. Keep mom and dad, grandma and grandpa out of assisted living. Make it so they can get around on their own and live independently. Maybe you've had a surgery at home and you don't have somebody like me to help you around, and you need stair lifts or ramps or grab bars or lift chairs or even some bathroom remodeling. They're going to work with your insurance. They have 0% financing for qualified individuals. Plus, if you use a CPAP machine, I got a lot of family members who do. If you are unhappy with your vendor, switch today and get supplies directly mailed to you, and you can test it out in their big, beautiful, brand new showroom on the South Side. And they have the latest in continuous glucose monitors. Check out everything they have to offer at hhme.com, Hyatt Home Medical Equipment. By the way, have you noticed Michael Kopech not so good here in spring so far?
Oh, speaking of another pile of suck that I'm over.
Oh, yeah. You're fired up today. You are. I thought I was going to be ranty. You're rantier than me. I got to tone it down and let Ed go today, I think is what I'm going to do.
Here's the thing, okay? You're in a bad mood for very good reasons. I'm just in a bad mood because I'm turning into a grumpy old man, and I got sleep, so I have energy. You're too tired to be that grumpy.
Listen, here's my issue with Michael Kopech. I don't see any difference in him now. In the small sample size, admittedly, in spring training. But this is when I'm supposed to see that there's something different with him. I don't see anything different now than what I've seen over the last several years. He's a guy who can blow people away with his stuff. He's going to strike out guys, but he puts too many guys on base. He struggles to use too many pitches, so he doesn't go deep into games. And he continues to have problems. At this point, he's got 3 appearances for a total of 7 innings. So I know it's not everything. But he's got a 1.71 whip. He's got a 7.71 earned run average. He has 6 runs that have crossed the plate and then another one that was unearned. He's given up 2 bombs so far. And I look at Garrett Crochet.
He's hit 2 batters.
I look at Garrett Crochet, who's had pretty much the same opportunity as him. And Garrett Crochet hasn't let a run cross the plate yet. Has a 0.83 whip. And I'd rather see him in the starting rotation. I'd rather see, again, Mike Soroka.
Oh, yeah.
He's pitching well in the starting rotation. I expect Dylan Cease to be in the starting rotation. I expect Eric Fetty to be in the starting rotation. It seems to me like Chris Flexen likely could head towards the starting rotation. Nick Nastrini has shown me so much more than what I'm seeing from Michael Kopech. And I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a group of White Sox fans who have either bought a jersey or are blinded by the fact that they were told for years by the marketing department that Michael Kopech is a thing, who are going to sit there and say, no, 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 you got to put him in the rotation. And I'm waiting to see, is it really different within this organization with Getz at the helm and a new group of people evaluating talent? I'm not even counting Pedro. Pedro just says stuff and half of it doesn't make any sense. But those people making decisions, I want to see if it's going to be really different, because unless there's a major change, I don't see how this guy makes your rotation and you look at me with a straight face and explain it to me as a White Sox fan that it's the right choice.
Well, to give you an idea, as you're comparing pitchers in our small sample size from spring training, let me throw Jake Woodford at you. And before you say, who's Jake Woodford, I'm not going to answer because it doesn't matter. Jake Woodford was never making this team. However, he's got 7 2/3 innings, which puts him 2/3 of an inning ahead of Michael Kopech in terms of opportunity, as you say. He's got a 4.70 ERA. He's given up 3 more hits than Kopech. However, he's given up 3 fewer runs total, 2 fewer earned runs. He has yet to give up a home run. He has hit only 1 batter to Michael Kopech's 2. He has walked 2 fewer guys and struck out just as many as Kopech. He struck out 10 for a 1.70 whip and a 2.90 average against and a 4.70 ERA. Jake Woodford's not making the White Sox. Tell me why Michael Kopech, with worse numbers in the same amount of innings, should be making the starting rotation automatically. And don't tell me he's working on stuff, because he's still inefficient, like you said. He still uses way too many pitches to get through 3-inning starts, okay? 2 3-inning starts. Yes, he's striking guys out, but so is Jake Woodford. That doesn't mean anything right now necessarily, because he's facing off against some guys that are not going to make major league squads, okay? Strikeout numbers are great, but in spring training, I think they can be inflated a little. What has me worried is he's got 6 walks on spring training, okay? 6 walks. The only person who's got worse is Touki Toussaint, whose ERA is 59.40 right now.
That's bad. That's a bad
that's
ERA,
really
right?
That's bad.
That's
okay?
A bad one.
And Touki,
I love spring training ERAs. I love
them. Yes. 59.40. Touki is joining Jesse Chavez
that
on the bus out of town.
That means that if Touki pitched 9 innings right now, he would give up 59 runs.
Yes. If they left him out there for all 9 innings of a spring training game, he would somehow fall just short of 60 runs that he's giving up in that game.
That's not really what would happen. That's the beauty
of
a spring training ERA where he's only pitched one. He's appeared in 2 games and he's had 1 2/3 innings. But still, right. It's funny to look at.
Brian Shaw is giving up 25 runs a game by that same logic. So, you know, but here's the thing is that Kopech is walking guys. And that's where you start to get worried, because Michael Kopech cannot walk guys as a starting pitcher. Okay. He's got to keep guys off of base. He can't walk guys even as the closer of this team or as a reliever on this team. He's wild. He's not under control. He's not showing you anything that suggests that he's better. Garrett Crochet, to your point about a guy who is doing much, much better, Garrett Crochet hasn't walked anybody yet, and he's got 9 strikeouts, but no walks. That means that guys are either getting hits off of him, there's been 5 hits in 6 innings, or they're striking out, or they're just not getting on base. He's keeping guys off, okay? That's what Garrett Crochet is showing me. He's showing me that he is ready to go this season, that his stuff is back, that his arm is back. Michael Kopech is showing me that he just apparently doesn't want to play baseball because he hasn't done anything to improve himself. He's gone out there now. He's not a young guy. That's the other thing, too. The core of this team that Rick Hahn put together, the rebuild, which was never a rebuild, and I could do an entire year's worth of shows just explaining to you why Rick Hahn didn't rebuild anything. But Michael Kopech is not a young guy anymore. He has had plenty of opportunity in the majors, and I understand he was hurt for a year, but a lot of guys come back from Tommy John and are fine, okay? And they do better in some situations. Garrett Crochet is also coming back off of that, and he has no walks in 6 innings. The guy hasn't put anybody on base except for by a hit. They've had to earn it. Michael Kopech is giving it away.
He was 5-12 last year with a 5.43 ERA. Let me just remind all of you of that. He had 27 starts. He went 5-12. He had a whip of 1.59. Which is pretty damn close to what he's doing right now. And so what has changed? I get the idea of it's spring training and you don't want to just look at small sample sizes. And we heard Merck come on the show and be like, you know, they make a lot of these decisions before they get in there. So, you know, don't put too much stock into what guys do. But yeah, I'm putting stock into it when it's the same thing I saw all last year that made me say all last year on the show that he's a better bullpen piece. It's the reason why Chris Getz has made mention of the fact that he looks pretty good when he comes out of the bullpen. It's the reason why Michael Kopech was like, I'll do whatever it is to help the team, because I'm sure that conversation has been had with him.
He just wants to keep a job in the major leagues. Listen, at this point,
this guy is not a starting pitcher. He's not. I'm sorry that he's not. It doesn't work out for everybody. And I just think he's been given the opportunity at this point, and I'm not seeing anything different. And if you really do want to subscribe to this philosophy that has been pushed on us this year, that if we play defense and we support the pitchers, and the pitchers are going deeper in the games, inducing ground balls, relying a little bit more on their defense. I mean, Dylan Cease has already made mention that that's one of his goals is going deeper in the games this year, right? He understands what he's got behind him defensively. And you can see it now. You can start to see it as they're getting the rust off. You can start to see some flashes of really good defense behind the pitchers. And if you subscribe to that, you can't have a pitcher in your rotation who's putting on a runner in two-thirds every inning. You can't have a guy that's issuing that many free passes. You negate the defense if you have a guy that's doing those kind of things. Michael Kopech doesn't fit with the type of team that they've built. He fit with the Rick Hahn idea of go out there and throw as hard as you can, and if you go 4 1/3, Jason Benetti and Steve Stone will say, hell of a performance. It's not a quality start. It taxed your bullpen. It beat you up over the last couple of years. There's a reason that you could never get any traction for the last few years with all this supposed talent on your team, and a lot of it was because of that philosophy. And if the philosophy has changed and they truly believe it, it'll be hard for them to explain to me why he's in the starting five. It really will be. I mean, you know, they'll come up with a reason why a guy like Nastrini isn't there, because they would have to make room for him on the 40 and we still need to polish him and all this other crap. But it'll be very hard for you to tell me that there's a reason why Garrett Crochet is not in the rotation and Michael Kopech is. Get over to SoxInTheBasement.com. That's where you first of all make sure you're subscribed on any podcast player available. You can also support some great small businesses. Camp Craft Cocktails, available in our store right now. All the ingredients given to you to make an amazing cocktail, you just add the spirit of your choice. Impress your friends and spice things up at your bar. We're also supporting veterans with a veteran-owned business. If you drink coffee, check out the selections from Split Rock Coffee. And finally, at SoxInTheBasement.com, you can support this show by making your next wager through our preferred sports books. Maybe you win some money, they kick us a little bit of dough for you signing up through us. It's a win-win. See it all at SoxInTheBasement.com. If I said Cease, Fede, Soroka, Crochet, Nastrini, would you be able to make an argument to put somebody else in that rotation over those five guys right now? Looking at what you've seen in the spring, looking at the idea that Fede was, you know, they paid him money, they believe in the KBO results, so you're going to give him just a little bit more leash. Of those five guys, I have a hard time saying that there's somebody else who's better than those five from what I've seen in spring training and looking at their possible ceilings over the other options that are right now in camp.
So Cease, Fetty, Soroka, Nastrini, and Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, I'd put those five in my rotation right now.
No, because I think Nastrini and Crochet are the future. I think Dylan Cease is by far your best pitcher. You're right, Eric Fetty was brought over here because he is a completely different guy than he was with the Nationals. You're bringing over the KBO Cy Young / MVP winner. And, you know, I don't know that I would say that I would say Davey Garcia's had a great camp and shows a lot of promise, and he was a guy that was highly regarded out of the Yankee system once upon a time that they gave up on, so that tells you what they know. And Chris Flexen's actually pitched pretty well, but I don't know that those two guys are better than the ones that you named at this point. At this point, I would actually be curious to see what Garrett Crochet does and if he can get through five innings to start off with and then see if there's something he could build to for later. And I do think that Soroka needs to have that opportunity to start, because that's a guy that's got a much higher ceiling, like you said. He's got an opportunity to regain some semblance of ace status. So I think between Cease, Fetty, and Soroka, that's, you know, those guys, if they reach their ceilings, that's a really good rotation.
I think Garcia is the best argument that you have for me, because I think I would put Flexen in the long relief role and the swing thing. He's done that before.
Yes,
and I think
has.
That's what he's suited for. And then I'm not relying on him as much, because I don't think he's ever going to be somebody that's anything more than a fifth starter on a team that's got any kind of chance of contending. And I think I put Michael Kopech into a position where, all right, coming out of a crochet start where the lefty's out there dealing, here comes somebody throwing it from the right side. Here's a leverage moment. You know, he's at his best when he doesn't need to worry. There are some really good things about Michael Kopech. He is at his best when he does not need to worry about his pitch count. He does not need to worry about how many pitches it's going to take him to get the batter out. He can just throw it all at them and come out of the game when he's gotten through the situation. He is at his absolute best at that. He could make a massive career out of that. He could be somebody that would actually elevate the amount of money he makes in this game if he went in that direction. He is what he is at this point. Okay, where can we use him that's best for the team? And I think that's where they should be looking. A guy that is claiming that he's going to do what's best for the team. Pedro's talking about him doing the best for the team. He's getting paid a ridiculous amount of money this year as Yoán Moncada, and he's going to be in your two spot. Now, Pedro Grifol, if you listen to why he's in the two spot, it will make your head hurt. You'll start to feel a trickle of liquid out of your ears. That is your brain melting.
Has anybody seen Scanners?
It is a weird thing to listen to him talk about it, because look, most guys in the two spot in the modern game are the best hitters on their team, or one of the best hitters on their team. Yoán Moncada is not that. Okay. Now, I do like the idea that Yoán Moncada is willing to do whatever is asked of by his manager. And so if his manager wants him in the two spot and he wants him to lay down a bunt, he's willing to do it. If he's more focused on what's best for the team than what loud accessory he can put on his uniform, then that's a good thing. I'll take that. But I do listen to Pedro talk sometimes, like, well, he's got to be in there. He's got to be able to sacrifice himself. That's not what I want for my two hitter. All right. I mean, situational hitting, that's the other
not
thing.
Not since 1988.
Well, here's the other thing. People keep saying, like, well, that's how they won in 2005. Wrong. Tadahito Iguchi is the number two hitter. Was good as the number two hitter because, not because he was bunting, not because he was sacrificing himself, because he understood how to take the ball into the opposite direction. Tadahito was great standing up there in that season when Scott Pesednik was on first and giving Pesednik enough time to steal a base. And then if he was down in the count, being able to poke the ball to the right side for either a base hit or a productive out that moved Pesednik further. That's what you need from your number two hitter. Not a guy who's going to come in while Benintendi's on first and lay down a bunt and give himself up. That is a very different way of looking at the two hitter. All right. Now, if Moncada's able to do that, great. I don't know if he's ever shown me over his career the plate discipline it takes to be able to do what a guy like Iguchi did in that season, where he was sitting at the two spot. If that's what Pedro's looking for, great. I don't know if that's the guy. I think the White Sox have a much better chance, again, putting their best hitter there. And if they were to start off with Benintendi, Robert, and Eloy Jimenez right off the bat, scare the hell out of pitchers. And don't have Robert giving himself up and actually manage the way that the modern game is managed. The problem is that he's got Tony in his ear. As much as we don't want to admit it, he has mentioned now time and time again what a wealth of information that old man is. And Tony La Russa and his old ways is still lingering around this dugout. And that's going to be a problem until Tony goes away or Chris Getz gets to hire a manager that will laugh at Tony, tell him thank you very much, pat him on the head, and forget everything he just said as he walks down the hallway to go make a real game plan.
Yeah, that's such an old school way of looking at things. And if you're going to do that, that's Nicky Lopez. That's somebody else. There's no base stealer at the top here. Andrew Benintendi's not going to run that much, frankly. And so you're right. There's much better way to do that, especially because Eloy Jimenez has admitted he made a mechanical change to try and do better this year. And small sample size, but Eloy seems to be working. So
he's going to be a beast. I'm watching the national people watching him now starting to give him credit. I mean, look, Scott White, who's been on here from CBS Fantasy Sports, they're doing all the rankings on CBS Fantasy Sports. I've been watching Eloy Jimenez slowly climb up.
Oh, it's just going up and up and up and up.
Their prediction model has got him for a big offensive year based off of what they've learned about him, what they're seeing in him. Like, you're seeing things change in the predictions for Jimenez. Now, he's got to stay healthy. right? But if I had to look at him and Moncada and say, which one do I think is going to earn the contract next year and Getz won't buy them out, I think it's far more likely that Aloy Jimenez would still be on this team next year.
Way more likely.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found. And always on socksinthebasement.com.